Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Many of You Should Become Teachers. My name is Riley Duick. This is an episode of Summer School, which is our shorter than usual episode where we just give you a little bite-sized episode about faith and learning that you can enjoy while you're relaxing on your porch or not traveling, whatever it is that we're doing during this COVID-19 summer that we have. Today we have an episode with a student. A graduate of Christian education, just happened to be finishing grade 12 at the school that we teach at. And we have here with Dave, my co-host, a good, skeptical, thought-provoking conversation about the student side of Christian education and to process all these different things and all these buzzwords and all the different things that come up with their experience. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Christian Ed graduate Mona Yu.
So I'm here with Mona in socially distant in my classroom.
Hello. Mona.
Mona, you graduate, well, like literally next week.
Yes, I do.
So you are coming to the end of your time at our school, and I've known you in a variety of contexts. Probably the most number of hours would be our IB history course.
Yeah.
And that wrapped up, again, recently, but distantly. Chapel leadership in our school. There was another like service leader. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about the service project that we were part of a little bit. So kind of bits and pieces, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, maybe for us to start off and for our listeners, some of your reflections of your time at our school and as it draws to a close. I don't know, are you in reflective mode now?
Yeah, I think I have been since like this social isolation started.
Yeah.
A lot of time to think. I would say my biggest takeaway in these past few years is honestly through my IB classes, both history and English, learning how to be critical of what we're taught and sort of that unlearning process of things that we were taught before that we don't quite believe in now.
There's an element of that that is, like, the big fancy word for that is deconstruction.
Okay.
Like there's an unpacking of things, right? Because we've often said this, and you're right at this pivot moment. I feel like off camera, off microphone, we've had these conversations that you're at this pivot moment mm-hmm. of the rest of your life is about to happen, but you're also taking stock of all the things that you've been taught here.
Yeah.
And some of those things, like in terms of maturity and just a grade 12 versus when you said you came here in grade 6, mm-hmm. like that's a process and that's a journey.
Right.
So there are some things along the way that we naturally would just shed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the idea of, deconstruction, but we're not going to take all the building block pieces down from your education and then leave you.
Right.
I don't know if that is a bit of a prompt for you of what was built for you here?
After I deconstructed?
Sure, yeah. Or you mentioned those classes in particular. I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but what was it about those classes that is sticking in the forefront of your mind?
One thing that comes to mind is when you wrapped up our class, you quoted a female historian that was talking. She was a professor who was addressing her students.
Right.
And
yes.
One thing that really stood out was when she said, I actually couldn't really care if you can't remember all the dates or all the presidents, but what's important is the ability to be empathetic and listen to voices that you don't always agree with or always hear. That historical empathy can really translate into our daily lives as well, especially in our current world situation. I think that's really applicable.
Yeah, I am remembering that now. That's actually, her name is Dr. Alicia Kaufman at Baylor University. I'll do a shout out and a plug for her work as a historian. But yeah, that's, I learned that from her,
mm-hmm.
was this idea of empathy and that actually the individual, you're not going to remember all the individual lessons. And I don't just mean my own class, right?
Right.
Think of your whole timetable. Think of your whole course over the span of whether it's your IB, 2 years of IB, or all your time in our high school, you're going to be drawing things at sort of a different altitude, right? It's not at the, like, what did I learn in A block, right? Into now, even without COVID, than it was when you were in the middle of it.
Yeah, definitely.
And then I think the other part of it is not really knowing the future, but you know that this is coming to an end. And so those become sort of natural reflection points of you're not going, but we live our lives forward, but reflection is always considering what we're drawing from and what we're taking.
Okay.
And I know that, you know, just as an example, right, we've done, you've done, you know, reflections in your courses. You've also been applying for different things, right? So you have to, you're presenting yourself to the world.
Yeah.
And as a student, and what has shaped you, what you're passionate about. So to me, the pivot moment is like, or what others might call a, just a milestone event in your life. This is a very defining shift for you.
Yeah. Actually, I can speak to that a little bit. I would say 2 years ago, like faith-wise, because we go to a faith-based institution, I was really struggling with like God and this idea of faith, because I didn't really like how it was presented to me at the faith-based places I was at. What really helped me was this person came into my life. She's my youth pastor, and she really helped mentor me. And for, I would say, the past 2 years, the overall theme of my, you could say, faith journey, or, you know, all that lingo,
whatever you want to call it,
was authenticity. And I think that was really important for me, because I realized that, like, life is so messy, and sometimes trying to clean it up or saying that we have, like, definite answers to things in life is just not, like, realistic, right? And being able to have these, like, honest conversations with one another and being, like, authentic to ourselves and to other people was really important to me. And basically, throughout the past 2 years, that's been something I've always had in the back of my head, and I feel like that's really shaped, like, me, who I am today.
That's good. And you mentioned, I like that, you know, the faith-based institution. Like, we spend a lot of time on this podcast around Christian education. We think a lot about institutions.
Oh, yeah.
And so I wonder, as a, and I hate using the word product, but you're a product of this institution, right? Like, you've been shaped and formed here. And you mentioned that you found some things that were unhelpful. You didn't like the way that it didn't sort of maybe jive or align with the realities, the messiness, as you said, the authentic part of life. Do you think that that is, and do you think that that gap or that that slippage between the institution and then your real life, is that inevitable?
Yeah.
Like, can and I'm not asking for a solution, like how could an institution overcome this, but maybe out of your own experience, what if that has just been predetermined by the fact that this is a school and it's an institution and it has, you know, a structure and a form to it that you freely admit, and I'm glad you're open to say, wasn't always helpful.
Yeah.
Right?
I think, like you said, it is inevitable that there's going to be this gap, because just presenting this, when you teach from a faith-based perspective, it kind of eliminates the room for, like, flexibility and adaptability. Like, even the idea of a chapel.
Right.
If you're a faith-based institution, people are sending their kids here for that faith-based education, but it doesn't take into consideration where the student is at, and if they're not at a place where they're willing to receive that, and sending them to chapel, I feel like, is what can increase that gap. And something else that I've been reflecting on is what I was taught in my other class, my IB English class, the sacredness of the mundane, or how we compartmentalize different parts of our life, right? Going to a faith-based institution, sometimes we forget that all parts of our life are sacred, because we have these special buildings dedicated to the spiritual. And that can be really dangerous if we forget that Yeah, everything is sacred, even the most boring, ordinary classes.
And we can lose sight of that very quickly.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, yeah. Okay, can I? I'll ask it sort of like a pointed question.
Yeah.
And you can take this in the direction you want. Do you feel that, I'll use the word, do you feel that this place has indoctrinated you? Like, you speak of a rigidity.
Yeah.
Like, is this more about indoctrination versus you speak of wanting to have space to explore, even wrestle with? I don't know if that's even a scale, like from indoctrination to freedom to explore. Do you feel that this has been helpful, or that is something that needs to be unpacked, expanded even more?
I think that goes back to your question, like, is it even possible for an institution to allow that exploration on that institution level? Because I'm assuming when teachers come to this place, they need to sign a contract saying, yes, I believe in all of this. And right. I've had conversations with other teacher individuals, and they wrestle with some of those things. And obviously, like, no one's at that place where they're, like, perfect and holy with God. But I feel like sometimes that's the pressure for teachers to come across that way, because they represent the faith, but also this school, and the school has a certain reputation to uphold. If you have teachers saying things to
going
students,
off script,
yeah,
I often will say, I think I've said it on this podcast, and I've said it in class, right? I'm on to a certain extent, I'm a professional Christian,
yeah,
in this environment, right? Yeah. I mean, it, like, that's part of the brand, in one sense, and so it adds layer. Yeah, it's a challenge.
Yeah, definitely. If anything, the room to explore, I would say, would come in the form of individual conversations like these, or in smaller settings like classrooms, where you can have that guidance from a person who is strong in their faith and have wrestled through these things, and they can guide you in that wrestling. I don't know if that's possible for an institution to do on that large of a scale.
It's almost at the classroom level, maybe, or the relational level of the teacher.
That's the key. You need that relationship to be able to wrestle, to help another person wrestle. But it's difficult to wrestle as an institution because there's no relationship between all individuals.
Interesting. Yeah. A little bit about, like, student experience. I mean, you've mentioned the classrooms and teachers. This is a recurring thing that often comes up, that the teachers make a difference.
Definitely.
You're not naming names, but tell me, like, your peer groups, as you journeyed through our school here, what role did friendships and peers in classrooms play?
Related
to faith. This is what the teachers talk about. This is what, you know, we go to a chapel, we have our Bible class, you know, we're going to start day with prayer or whatever. And so in that sense, it's almost just assumed and doesn't come up in friend.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Context.
I think the issue with having institutions that are faith-based is not only does it become the default almost, which is never something I think that faith should be, but when it does become the default and it's almost assumed, it becomes very surface level, which in turn almost, like, suffocates the ability to, like, dive deeper into it because it's so prevalent, but the way that it's surrounding us is not that deep sort of intimate connection that people are, like, looking for when they want to talk about faith.
Okay, yeah, so, like, what you say sort of, like, surface level is almost like, in other contexts we would call that cultural Christian. It's part of the culture.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just so encultured that then it doesn't actually sink in.
Exactly.
Has it been your experience, I'm totally curious, has it been your experience that anybody who is, I'm going to use sort of our Christian vocabulary, people who are on fire for God, people really fired up and serious and passionate about their faith, is that almost like a liability around here?
What do you mean by liability?
Is it something that is, how is that perceived? How are people perceived, those who would be really maybe intense, active very serious about their faith, is it, are they abnormal in this context? Are they, how are they viewed?
I'm trying to think of someone like that in our grade. I don't know if other people view me that way. I can't think of, I think to a certain extent when someone is acting like they are on fire for God, people are like, oh, they're faking it.
That's what I'm trying to get at. What is, maybe that's a better way to say this. For somebody, and I might edit this. So how would you say, Mona, in your experience, somebody who is, to use our Christian language, uh-huh. somebody who's sort of on fire for God, really passionate, wanting to be serious about their faith. Yeah, how are they viewed? How are they, you just mentioned that the assumption is that they're putting this on.
Yeah.
That they're faking it.
It's a facade.
It's a facade.
Yeah.
What, let's, I just want to,
I want to unpack that
because that, to me, that we would automatically go there and say those expressions, right? So like hands raised, and I'm just thinking of what expressively that would look like, right? And you know, people who are leading and maybe have the microphone and are praying yeah. publicly or doing some expression spiritually in our community, the default is to view it a little bit skeptically, maybe yeah. even cynically, to use some of the
definitely
language.
Definitely cynically.
What do you think about that? Like,
maybe that goes back to the institution thing, because something that I've like thought a lot about is the relationship between like what's going on in our hearts and our like outer actions, right? And the ideal progression of that would first be like we believe and we're convicted in our hearts, which is why we do these things naturally. But the institution level kind of brings it the opposite way. Mm-hmm. It's you have your read devotions in the morning, you pray together as a class, but it's like very definitely not present in a lot of the students' hearts, which is not like to say it's a bad thing. It's just people are at different places in their lives, right?
Of course, of course.
But when it's a continual culture of that opposite from action to inner heart rather than from like inside us to action, it could project a sort of facade.
It's not unlike the uniform you're wearing. Do you remember, like, I'm thinking of Mr. Dueck, who's been on this podcast, IB English, as you mentioned. He talks a lot about that, right? Like the external
yeah.
of like putting on a uniform. I think he ended the course. We ended the course that way, right? Mm-hmm. That uniform, it's we do everything, it mm-hmm. gets imposed externally, but you're yeah. looking at the intrinsic internal.
Yes, exactly. Hmm. Which is why people think it's a facade.
Interesting. Yeah, and it is sad, and yeah, that was, I was wrestling with how avoidable is that, and it, or is it inevitable in a Christian school?
Yeah, I don't know.
So in a few, well, I mean, you graduate next week, and then whatever summer looks like in our COVID times. But you're moving on. You're heading away from our school and a Christian school.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, back to our language of the pivot? What are your thoughts about going, quote, beyond uh-huh. Christian education? You're continuing your education. You're going to yeah. university. What does that, from this vantage point sitting here in June mm-hmm. 2020, what does that feel like to you?
I did some reflection on this a while ago, and you know how I said authenticity was kind of my little motto thing
sure.
for the past 2 years? I decided that for university, I want to go in being really honest. And I know like those two are similar, but I guess in my head, how I apply that to my life is different. I want to be honest with myself, with God, and with other people. And I think what that means, because there was this one period where I didn't like the word Christianity, or there were some things that were associated with Christianity.
We talked about some of those things.
Yeah.
In our course.
Like the antidote and toxin
idea.
Yeah. That I really was against, and I almost felt ashamed of being associated with this culture, because I would never want to willingly hurt someone in that way. But I know that this faith of mine, it has a long history of being yeah. racist or homophobic or all of those things. And for a while, I was really like ashamed and scared to associate myself with that. Recently, I realized that I don't want to be ashamed of that. I don't have the answer of how to kind of piece those things together. I think a part of that answer would be what we discussed in class, being the antidote as well. You can't just be part of this faith and not actively seek to heal the hurt that this faith has brought. But that also means not being ashamed and being able to boldly associate yourself with this faith and kind of redeeming it through healing process.
Oh, that's good. I really like that. I'm also here. What's coming to my mind right now are the commandment, the greatest commandments, you know, that Jesus talks about, which is love of God and love of neighbor.
Yeah.
And that's what I heard in your response was desire to love God. And then this open-ended question in our own time, in our own culture, in our own context, what does it mean to love my neighbor? Or we can even back it up even further, because not everybody agrees on this. Who is my neighbor?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And who, yeah, who's my neighbor and how am I to love them?
Yeah. I think this connects back to one of our earlier conversations this week about the dimensions of our faith.
Oh.
This institution largely preaches a doctrine that's very vertical.
Oh, like, yeah, okay. Yes.
From our heart to God, and is my heart right with God, which is like undeniably very important, right? But we forget this horizontal dimension of loving your neighbors. And of course, we are taught to love your neighbors. I'm pretty sure every student here knows the two greatest commandments.
And we've talked a bit about rhetoric and like words to action.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
But what does that actually look like in action? I feel like we're lacking a little bit of that.
Yeah, and this is, you know, again, to our listeners who many will be in very similar contexts to the school that we're in right now, to recognize that we're wanting to sort of round that out. I think the analogy I used was like a diet, like the like food consumption, and it's like we have a deficiency maybe in our diet, right? And it's actually about bolstering up some things. So some Christian communities are very justice oriented,
yeah,
right? Maybe at the expense of personal, that vertical we were talking about, the personal piety. And we were saying, yeah, this was a conversation we had when you first showed up this week, was we err on the side of emphasizing the vertical and less so the horizontal. So, yeah. Hey, one other thing, we'll see if this fits in as well. You have a podcast as well. You did something with chapel leadership, because we, out of the box thinking with the pandemic and we were all sitting at home. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how that came about?
Yeah, sure.
Do you
want
to plug that?
So I started this podcast called A Conversation that's affiliated with our school chapel team. And it came out of a place where I saw a need for more intimate, real, like authentic conversations.
Coming from what we were just talking about.
Exactly. And kind of unpacking that messier side instead of just giving perfectly packaged answers. And kind of just being able to share the wisdom that I've received from teachers throughout my time at PA. So that's what the podcast was based on.
Awesome. Yeah, no, it's been good. I've loved seeing some of these things come. We've had a lot of really good conversations, and even to just, and that's even how this own our own podcast was was born, was like let's broaden this and talk a little bit more. So, anything else we should add?
Something else came to mind that I kind of want to add.
Go for it.
It has to do with like the action, the institution sort of thing. Something that really bothered me was the word being pure and blameless. I hated the word purity because I was learning about the purity culture through my podcast, The Conversation, when I was kind of doing some background research when I was preparing for another interview.
Okay.
And I didn't know that this was actually like a name, purity culture, for something. Of course, that's related to sexual purity, but I'm just thinking in a broad term. I got to this point where I was very frustrated because I wasn't able to wrap my head around what it meant for God to call us to be pure when it's so obvious that, like, we can't be. But I know that we're all saved, but it's kind of like that, like, balance or like a seesaw. It wasn't until recently I was having this conversation with my youth pastor, and I was expressing to her my frustration, and she said, like, let's back up a little bit. How are you defining purity?
Good.
And I was like, well, I guess actions, right? Like, not sinning. And she brought up a really interesting point. I've always really liked this phrase, a man after God's own heart, describing King David.
Right.
And if we think about it, that's probably the ultimate form of, quote, purity, right? Being able to be given that title of wanting to chase so wholeheartedly after God's will. And then she's like, well, if you take a look at David, I don't think he was the most pure man based on your definition, right? He raped a woman, he killed her husband, killed some other people. But the essence of purity, probably in God's eyes, is our heart posture. And I think through my podcast, A Conversation, and through different conversations with individuals at PA, I've realized that it's much more important to place an emphasis on being pure in your heart's intentions than the actions that sometimes the institution emphasizes more.
And Mona, I say this to you, especially as you are going to be walking across our stage next week, that idea that you talk about intention, the purity of heart, mm-hmm. pure of heart, pure of motive, and it actually is directional. It's about what are you pursuing, what are you going after, as opposed to a laundry list of you know, check boxes that you did or did not do. Mm-hmm. That actually, that is at our heart, and I know the institution doesn't always do a great job of this, but it's that you've not arrived.
Yeah.
Just because you've graduated and we're going to give you a piece of paper, right? In one sense, that's a milestone, achievement, accomplishment, but giving you the resources and the tools for into, as we were just, I was hearing about, you're like the next phase of your life, that actually, sure, motive and the shaping of your desires and what you actually want to pursue, it's actually about the wanting to pursue.
Yeah.
As opposed to maybe focusing on the hiccups and the trips along the way,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
This has been awesome, Mona. We've had many wonderful conversations over the past year or so, and I'm so glad we could feature you on our podcast too. It's wonderful, so thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to another episode here. If you're looking for more content, be sure to give us a review on whatever podcast listener that you choose. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any new episodes, and be sure to check us out on our website at notmanyview.com. Hope you're enjoying your summer. Have a good one. Bye-bye.